Like the office they commemorate, presidential libraries are living institutions. Certainly, it is my hope that the Reagan Library will become a dynamic intellectual forum where scholars interpret the past and policymakers debate the future.
Welcome to a Reagan Forum, hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. The Center for Public Affairs offers lectures and forums presenting perspectives on important public policy issues of the day, from politicians, authors, members of the media, business and military leaders, and more.
We are spending the month of May by bringing you some of our favorite Reagan retrospective podcasts. These podcasts are stories shared by people who knew President and Mrs. Reagan best, people who worked with them, were friends with them, and knew them throughout their life. Each podcast brings you new behind-the-scenes stories from the Reagan years. They're funny, poignant, and rich in history. We hope you enjoy. So far, we've brought you 6 episodes from Season 1, 6 more from Season 2, and 6 from Season 3. Today, we're going back to 2019 for our 4th and current season of Reagan Retrospective Podcasts. Although we have recorded 5 podcasts so far, only 3 have been published. So in this podcast, we will share all 3. In the 1920s, fewer than 7% of high school graduates in America attended college. But Ronald Reagan was determined to be among them. His sights were set on Eureka College, 110 miles southeast of Dixon, because one of Dixon's biggest heroes had become a football celebrity there. He dreamed of going there, but knew financially his parents would not be able to help. Ronald Reagan spoke with the college, and they agreed to give him a needy student scholarship to cover half of his tuition, and promised him a job that would cover his meals. Ronald Reagan officially majored in economics at Eureka College, but unofficially minored in extracurricular activities. Along with playing football, he pledged the Tau Kappa Epsilon fraternity, was the captain and coach of the swim team, ran track, was a basketball cheerleader, president of the Eureka Boosters Club, yearbook features editor, student senate member, and even student body president. His first giant step of leadership came during his freshman year when he represented his peers in a proposed strike against unfair faculty layoffs and other budget cuts. His rousing speech was a call to action for the students and led to a strike which forced the president to resign and normalcy return to Eureka College, thanks in part to the leadership of a young Ronald Reagan. Eureka is a Greek word that means I have found it. For Ronald Reagan, Eureka College was literally that, a place of discovery that fulfilled and exceeded his dreams for college. The opportunities and experiences he had at Eureka College prepared him for the rest of his adult life more than he ever could have imagined. In this Reagan retrospective podcast, we listen to Dr. Jamel Wright, the current president of Eureka College, who shares stories of how President Reagan's character has impacted her and Eureka College. Let's listen.
I am Dr. Jamel Wright, the 27th president of Eureka College, Ronald Reagan's college alma mater. So I am very excited to be here to share a couple of stories that I've read about and heard that I really think helped to define who he was. This first one is called Do the Right Thing and Remember All People Matter. When Reagan was a young boy, there was an incident where he and his dad had gone to a gas station in his hometown. And there was an African-American man and his son also at this same gas station around the same time. Well, he and his dad, Dutch and his dad, were there to get gas. And the other two people were there having to use the restroom. Well, the owner of that gas station, as the story goes, actually denied them, the African-Americans, access to use the restroom. And in that instant, Dutch's dad said, "Let's go." And even though the owner of that gas station asked, "How may I serve you? What do you need?" His dad responded, "We don't need anything. We're leaving." And fast forward now to Ronald Reagan's time at Eureka College, where one of his two sports, he was a swimmer and a football player. As a football player, they had traveled somewhere near his hometown for a football game. And there were African-American players on the team, even back in Dutch's time, attending Eureka College, one of whom actually was the captain of the football team. And they get there, and the hotel where they were supposed to stay would not allow the black players to stay at the hotel at that time. Keep in mind, Dutch's time was 1928 to 1932 when he ultimately graduated from Eureka College. And immediately, he told those players, "That's okay. Let's go to my house." And his parents opened their arms and their doors to the players of the football team. And I think those two stories, really, that do the right thing because and remember all people matter, if you see that throughout Dutch's life and ultimately President Reagan's life, where he respected people, he stopped and had conversations with people. It didn't matter what their position was. It didn't matter what he thought they did or whatever the perception was. And I don't even think it mattered if he knew that obviously they had a different perspective than he did. And so that's the type of leadership, that ability to care about people no matter what and to do the right thing. And that way you don't have to worry about being wrong. But we see that type of humility and that type of caring across his entire lifetime. And I think that's something that really sticks out to me and that is important for me when I think about some of the characteristics of a strong leader. The second story that I want to share is called The Birth of the Great Communicator. And Dutch Reagan, as a second semester freshman, again, as the story goes, he was called upon by some of the juniors and seniors at the college who were trying to rally students around issues dealing with tuition and a few other things. And instead of them going out and trying to rally the campus, they asked him to do so. Second semester freshman, I think they figured he has a lot less to lose than we do. So in McAllister Hall, which is also known as our chapel, he got on the stage and delivered a rousing speech that really did rally and unite the students in common purpose and cause. And it was then that he notes that it was the first time he realized that his voice could be influential and that his words could move people to action. And again, he became the great communicator. He often used his words and his influential voice as a way to rally people. He did so and he reached across the aisle and figured out ways to use compromising perspectives and those kinds of things to get people to unite in common purpose. As president of Eureka College, I have to tell you, I boast. I walk around with my chest poked out. It is definitely a prideful thing to say that I am able to serve as the first woman and African-American president of our 164-year-old college that graduated the 40th president of the United States of America, the same president who selected Sandra Day O'Connor to be the first woman to sit on the Supreme Court. And so again, that's a point of pride for me, definitely over the course of my career. I absolutely boast about it. I am proud of it. It's not something that I hide in any shame or anything of that nature. And it's always wonderful to be invited to speak about some of my thoughts about President Reagan, because I have grown to have even more fondness of him than I did years prior before becoming president of Eureka College.
More Reagan Retrospective Podcasts after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now back to our Reagan Retrospective Podcasts. Glenn Reibel was an HMX-1 Marine Corps sergeant who was fortunate enough to assist President and Mrs. Reagan on board Marine One many times. In this Reagan Retrospective Podcast, Sergeant Reibel shares his personal interactions with President Reagan and how President Reagan began his tradition of saluting members of the military whenever he saw them. Let's listen.
You know, when it came to saluting, it was it was President Reagan that really kind of started that tradition. And I really don't know the origins, but I do know that in my unit, specifically, with the Marines, President Reagan, I think there was maybe some trepidation as to, whether he should salute or not because he was in civilian clothes and, with his background. But whatever influenced that decision, he made the decision to acknowledge the Marines. And that really made a huge difference, to a unit that was already committed and really loyal. It had a profound effect on our focus on supporting him. You can see him in many of the video clips, you know, as he's, saluting and recognizing and acknowledging, you know, the Marines. And it came to be, you know, just really one of his, signature marks on how, you know, he treated the people that supported him in his presidency. A long time ago, President Eisenhower, he was on his way to, his retreat, I believe it was in Gettysburg. You know, he was all packed up, ready to go, got on Air Force One, and left, boarded a train. I believe that's when the Secret Service folks had realized they forgot his luggage. So they said, hey, you know what, there's some Marines down the road in D.C., in Quantico, Virginia, a little organization called HMX-1. They're experimenting with these things called helicopters. They might be able to help out. So we got the call, HMX-1 did, and we got his luggage to Gettysburg. It was at that point where President Eisenhower said, well, I'm the president, you know, Secret Service, you guys, you know, forgot my luggage. How is it that my luggage is here before I am? And it was at that point that the president started incorporating helicopters as part of the presidential transportation. You know, first onboarded with the HMX-1, I had received orders. I had onboarded in August of 1985. They had to go through a little process there to get a clearance, a top secret clearance that had a White House access. For me, it was about 3 months later that I became a full-fledged HMX-1 security, Marine. And I served duty there until it was December of 1990. So I was there for pretty much all of President Reagan's second term. I was able to support him, been either in direct support or had led nearly 40 missions for him. It was the first time I had seen, you know, President Reagan pretty much close at hand was up at Camp David. And, you know, President Reagan and is a great way of communicating. Just, acknowledged everyone was there. Asked Nancy to accompany him on a horseback ride. There was a little resistance there, but through President Reagan's persuasion, he was definitely able to persuade First Lady Nancy, you know, on that horse. So knowing that, it was kind of a fun and unique, just a little view, you know, into seeing him. He loved to, fly out to California, and he loved his vacations, you know, out in the California area. And we would take turns, you know, flying up from Point Mugu up to his ranch, just a little north of Santa Barbara. The president enjoyed horseback riding and doing outdoor activities. It wasn't uncommon for him to every once in a while, try to sneak up on you on his horseback, performing your duties, trying to guard him, and then kind of strike up a conversation. The privilege to be the, one of the final Marines to ever, give him his salute, when it comes to, acknowledgement and between his care, his honor, and his respect for Marines, not only, acknowledge myself and the other Marines, But he used that as an iconic gesture, to the nation, something that is an iconic photo today that I was really able to take part of. Working with a president of the United States, president of the United States is, one, it's a privilege. To work for President Reagan as the president of the United States goes far beyond privilege. The impact is highly significant, for myself and for my fellow Marines. You know, President Reagan, I think there was a love affair that he had with Marines in the sense that one of his quotes that he had was, some people spend their whole lives, wondering if they made a difference. Marines don't have that problem. And I'll say this, if I had the opportunity to tell him, I would let him know that, sir, you didn't have that problem either.
Our last Reagan retrospective podcast for today is absolutely fantastic. We had the privilege of sitting down with Carol Thatcher, the daughter of Britain's Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. She shared intimate stories of the political and personal friendship between her mother and Ronald Reagan, both during and after his presidency. Let's listen.
My name is Carol Thatcher. I'm Margaret Thatcher's only daughter. And I saw from the inside in number 10, what it was like for 11 and a half years when she was Britain's first woman Prime Minister. That included, obviously, her relationship with Ronald Reagan and other world leaders when they came to visit. I do remember going into number 10. I'd been to the theatre in London one evening and it was quite late and I went in and my mother had a reputation which was totally justified for working late into the night. And I said, "Hi, Mum, don't want to disturb you. What are you working on?" She said, "Foreign policy, dear." So I said, "Oh." So she said, "Ron Reagan and I will sound the bell for freedom in Europe." One of my mother's aides said, "Actually, they each believed so strongly, but together they were unstoppable." And it isn't just what they talked about doing, anyone can talk, it's that they delivered. And I think this is what made their partnership, and of course, in relation to the Berlin Wall, such an immense success. Indeed, a world changer. And they didn't just sound the bell, they delivered. I know President Reagan was out of office by November 1989, but together with Gorbachev, my mother and Ronald Reagan, that action, that success, gave millions and millions of people who lived under communism freedom, and this is what they both so deeply believed in. I remember meeting Ronald Reagan. He had the most wonderful charisma and presence and charm. And I remember someone in the White House telling me that when Mr. Gorbachev and Mrs. Gorbachev went to visit, the crowds outside were very enthusiastic. Of course, he was a very popular international figure, and he was very late, which you don't do if you're invited to the White House. And all the White House staff were getting a bit nervous. Anyway, along came Mr. Gorbachev, and President Reagan said, "Hi, we thought you'd gone home," which of course was brilliant to diffuse, you know, the embarrassment. And after his departure, one of his aides apparently said to him, "Oh, well, Mr. President, I hope you don't mind that Mr. Gorbachev is rather hogging the limelight. You know, he's on every television screen." "Oh, no. You see, I once co-starred with Errol Flynn." He had a line for every occasion, and normally it was a winning one. One slightly amusing story, since we're in the presidential library. When my mother and the other guests that Mrs. Reagan had invited flew from the funeral in Washington, D.C. over here, at the burial, my mother was sitting next to Arnold Schwarzenegger, then governor of California. And she'd left her sunglasses on Air Force One. Of course, there was a Californian sun sinking. And Arnie said, "Oh, well, look, borrow mine." And I think Ron Reagan, who had the most wonderful, charming, twinkling, charismatic sense of humor, would have been amused that his old political mate, Maggie, said goodbye to him wearing a pair of Terminator shades. They were definitely friends. On several occasions, notes were exchanged on birthdays, which goes well beyond the normal courtesies afforded to fellow leaders. My brother, a twin brother, got lost in a car rally in the Sahara Desert. And when he was found, I understand that Ronald Reagan rang up to say how relieved he was. There was a personal dimension to this political relationship that I don't think is guaranteed between other world leaders. And I really put that back to the fact that they'd met before they became world leaders. There was a genuine affection, there was a genuine admiration. I remember after she flew to Washington for President Reagan's funeral and then came here for the sunset burial, back in the UK, an American diplomat said to her, "Oh, some of the American people were very appreciative that you actually went to the US for President Reagan's funeral," and she shot back, and I hope I sound like her, "The world owes Ron Reagan a great deal." That was the sentence, and that, I'm sure, was what she thought and what she said.
These three Reagan retrospective podcasts are only the beginning of the entire season 4, so we recommend you visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Reagan Foundation to subscribe to our entire season, as well as all of our podcasts in all 4 seasons. Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A Reagan Forum podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of A Reagan Forum come out every Thursday. Like what you hear? Check out our Words to Live By podcast featuring radio addresses and speeches Ronald Reagan delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. New episodes drop every Tuesday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.